Of the Daft on Draft podcast. Free agency has come and not gone, but the first and second wave, I would say, of free agency is complete. We are roster filling at this point with veterans and castaways. And so Corey and I figured, what a perfect time. Teams have started to kind of fill the gaps in the needs of their roster. Mm-hmm. What do they still need? What have they positioned themselves to attack in the NFL draft? I don't know the strategy of other teams, but this is something that the Dallas Cowboys love to do. They love to kind of pin themselves into a position where they are picking one or two places in the NFL draft in round one and then going BPA after that. But we are going to go through the top 32 picks and see where we stand here mid-March. And I cannot do that alone. I will not do that alone. I have my co-host Corey Kinnon here with me. Corey, it is midnight, or it's zero dark 30 for you.
Yep.
It is 4:35 in the morning for me. I have my coffee. How are you doing right now?
I'm good. My daughter's fighting sleep a little bit tonight, but other than that, I'm good. I enjoy staying up at least like two nights a week. I can't do it as much as I did. Like in 2020 during COVID, dude, I was probably up Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, like till 3 a.m. Just because I could get up at 8, like set an alarm for 7:59, literally roll over to my laptop and start working. I can't do that anymore with two kids. I'm a bit older now as well. 5 years older now as well. So, those days are long gone, but I do like to get one or two nights in where I can kind of stay up and get some stuff done when the kids are in bed and there's nothing else going on. So, but I'm ready to dive in. I'm good to go.
Let's get it. Full transparency. We were boring this time around. And we just did a predictive. Okay. This is a predictive mock draft at this point. That's where we're at this point. Predictive and just back and forth. Corey took the odds. I took the evens. We talked through a couple of picks even. And so here they are. Let's get to it. The Tennessee Titans at number one, a selection that might kill their head coach, but a selection that we feel is at least heavily penciled in, right?
I do feel like Cam Ward to the Titans is pretty penciled in. Like they've spent their last two first round picks on offensive linemen, on Peter Skoronski and JC Latham. They just signed Dan Moore to a contract worth $20 million a year. And they just signed Kevin Zeitler to a 1-year deal for $9 million. So we're talking about spending $30 million APY in 2025, at least along their offensive line, plus their last two off first round picks. They don't have any receivers for him to throw the football to at this point, but I think they've geared up to just build around Cam Ward. Is I think what their emphasis has been in free agency. And I think it's kind of tipped their hand a little bit. And maybe they don't have to hide anything. They're picking number one overall. So there's not really much to hide. Not much to smokescreen. But I do think when you're that hell-bent on investing on your offensive line, I do think that tends to indicate. And that you signed Brandon Allen. That's the quarterback that you signed in free agency. A veteran backup who has some spot starting experience. I think they're all in on Cam Ward right now.
Yeah, I just wish, because I don't think that situation is insulated enough to really be conducive to his success in the near future. I really do hope, I don't think it'll happen, but I really do hope and wish that they would start Will Levis in year one and see what value they can recoup from Will Levis, if they're able to at all, if he's able to grow at all. Because I don't think, even if he has a decent year, if he has a decent year, you still get rid of him because you took Cam Ward at number one overall.
And the head coach
is there. Like, it doesn't really matter to me at that point. Like, you're still going to trade Will Levis, and you might be able to recoup a second round pick. If he plays well, you might even get more than what you actually spent on him in the first place, because this is a quarterback starved league. He is young. He is athletic. He is big and powerful with a great arm, and he just needs to figure the rest of it out. And that sounds a lot like Cam Ward too, but it's part of the reason why I think Cam Ward needs a year. He needs a year, and I don't think he's going to get it, and it's going to be really unfortunate for his development. But that is where I stand with him. And I wasn't a Will Levis fan. I'm not a huge Cam Ward fan. But I do think with that ceiling that he has, the playmaking ability that he has, it far, far exceeds what Will Levis has ever dreamed of being able to do outside of structure. So, number two, the Cleveland Browns. This is obviously your team, Corey.
This is why I wanted to draft odds, because I'm tired of drafting.
The thing is, at this point, I think it seems at least set in stone that Shedeur Sanders is not seen by the NFL the way that we see him. And so they're going to select the best player available. I would have them go Abdul Carter a million times out of a million if it weren't for the stress fracture in his foot and the shoulder injury that he played through and is still kind of dealing with. And you might say, well, Dalton, he's going to be a rookie. What does it really matter? This team is rebuilding. Well, the other side of this coin is you have what I believe is a potentially generational talent on the defensive side of the ball in Travis Hunter at cornerback. And then you also have the ability to use him on the offensive side of the ball for a team that could still use receiver help as well. And so for me, and not just that, but you have the freedom of an already somewhat talented secondary that can survive if you want to play him 50-50. If you want to play him even more on the offensive side of the ball to start his career and then transition him over to defense when you let guys go. And I think something that we haven't discussed with Travis Hunter that could be so much fun is just using him to your team's specific needs. And I know that we've talked about that from a draft perspective, but like, if you have a couple corners that you don't want to pay coming up in free agency and your wide receiver room is decent, flipping back over to the defensive side of the ball. If you are losing receivers, if you don't want to pay $25 million for a you know, second level, third level receiver, just have him switch over to the offensive side of the ball if you have a decent secondary. So I think the freedom of operation that you have on your roster is absolutely worth Travis Hunter at corner going number one overall, even if the Titans wanted to go that route.
I wouldn't complain as a Browns fan if Travis Hunter was suiting it for my team. The Browns have said they view him more as a wide receiver. And Travis Hunter, even like I saw it was reported by somebody from the Titans market. Travis Hunter reportedly wants to play receiver if he has to choose.
And he should. He should want to play wide receiver. The money's there.
Yeah, I mean, although that Stingley contract might throw him a little bit more back into perspective today, but...
Yeah, you better go out and earn that $1 million that we didn't guarantee you out of that deal. What a weird...
Dude, listen, man, David Mulugeta might be the best agent to ever exist.
Oh, yeah. He's so good.
Not only is Derek Stingley 23, but he got that dude a three-year deal where, honestly, it just puts the Texans in a situation where they're going to have to re-up in two more years when Stingley's 25.
Yeah.
This guy might get four or five contracts in his NFL career. Like, that's what we're talking about here with Stingley. That's wild. Number three, the Giants. This is where Abdul Carter's coming off the board. Azeez Ojulari just signed with the Eagles. I know they traded for Brian Burns last offseason. They didn't get the production out of him that they had hoped for. So they're a little slim in terms of pass rushers. Kayvon Thibodeau hasn't really been the player that they thought they were getting when they took him. Third overall as well. So I tend to think that this is a team that needs some pass rush help. And if I think they're going to choose whoever's on the board between Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter is what is going to come down to here. And in this case, it's Abdul Carter. So
I think Kayvon Thibodeau is a guy that maybe during the off season, in the slow seasons, we should go back and rewatch and see where we might have missed because I thought it was all there with him. I thought it was all there for him. So that might be something that we do, is kind of go back and watch guys who we thought were going to be it and then just didn't work out, and see if we can improve our process a little bit and see where we can fill in the cracks. Number four, speaking of filling in the cracks, at offensive tackle, the New England Patriots need one very badly. They need to protect their greatest asset in Drake May, and they're going to do that with Will Campbell, who you and I a little bit lower on probably than most people. I know Benjamin Solek has talked about him being the 1B in this class. I don't personally see it that way. I think he's a very talented player overall. I think that he has his weaknesses at offensive tackle, but I do think that New England is in a really fine spot here to take a guy who at least, and this is really important here, is going to be really good in the run game. And an offense with Mike Vrabel as the head coach and Josh McDaniels as the offensive coordinator. And as much as I don't feel for Josh McDaniels, the one thing that I will say is his teams consistently are able to run the football effectively, efficiently. His run game is very good and it is very downhill. And we have talked at length about Will Campbell's torque strength and ability to move people. It's a perfect run game fit for him.
Agreed. And then again, he has the ability to fail inside. And then at worst, you have a what? I don't think I would call him like a Zach Martin, Quentin Nelson level guard prospect, but I think he's a pretty high caliber guard prospect.
Why can't I think of his name right now? Washington forever and then Jacksonville.
Brandon Scherff. Yeah.
Like legit, like top 3 to 5 guardish, but maybe not like Hall of Fame guardish.
Yeah, I think I can agree with that. Jacksonville Jaguars. So James Gladstone was a part of the head of the scouting department in Los Angeles that saw them rebuild a defensive line room once Aaron Donald was winding down and then did retire. And he hit on guys like Kobe Turner and Braden Fisk. And guys like that. So Jacksonville needs to build up the interior of their defensive line a little bit here too. And in my opinion, just Mason Graham's the best player on the board too. So and if you look at the skill set of Mason Graham, again, very good with his hands, a pass rush savant, heavy hands, and then still does have a really high floor, but I think he brings a similar skill set that a guy like Braden Fiske brought to the Rams this year. And it kind of still that same, I mean, Kobe Turner's more finesse than those guys, but like, it seems like Gladstone wants penetrators and Mason Graham is that above all else. So Mason Graham to the Jaguars with the 5th overall pick here.
Yeah, actually it's funny when I first watched him, Braden Fisk was one of my comps for Mason Graham because of the, like sheer explosiveness and violence that he plays with.
Really fluid hips.
Yeah. And I thought they were both a little bit like a bull in a china shop as well. And it's worked out greatly for Braden Fisk. And I think that Mason Graham is just the more technically refined version of that. The Las Vegas Raiders, I still think that they have a long way to go defensively. And I just don't think it matters. I just don't think it matters. That's not where I'm going with this pick. I look at Raheem Mostert, Sincere McCormick, Zamir White, Dylan Laub. Like,
yeah.
On a Pete Carroll coach team?
No, thank you. Yeah.
Chip Kelly, offensive coordinator. First of all, I am so excited to see what Chip Kelly is able to bring to this offense at the NFL level now. Because I think his offense is a ton of fun. But we're bringing in a workhorse in that backfield, and that workhorse is going to be a 5'8" muscle hamster named Ashton Janty. I look at their offense, and yeah, wide receiver is a huge need, but there is not a single wide receiver I love at number 6 here. And even with positional value being, you know, what it is, and you're already going to be paying this guy, JNT, top of the market, I don't care, because I think you're immediately going to get top of the market talent. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the one thing that we kind of need to talk about when we talk about these running backs is maybe from a value perspective, like you're not overdoing it. You're not getting a wide receiver who is technically good monetary value. But what you are getting is a player who you can confidently project, like a Saquon Barkley, even in a bad situation. Saquon at number 2, too high. We all agree with that. But from a talent perspective, he was able to bring things that if you have other backs in that same situation, your run game isn't even sustainable. There's nothing you can do. But with Saquon Barkley, you have a little bit of a spark. And that's something that you can do as well with Ashton Jeanty. But you have a good offensive line, and you have a veteran quarterback, and you have a good offensive coordinator here now. I think this is a perfect fit for Jeanty in the top 10.
Yeah, we're talking about a head coach as well that was a part of a regime that drafted Rashad Penny in the first round and then drafted Kenneth Walker in the second round. And then the exact following year, we're like, you know what? We're going to take another day two running back. So these dudes love to draft running backs, and they love to draft them high. So, yeah, I think that's a good fit there with the Raiders. New York Jets, listen, man, they gave Justin Fields a boatload of money. And they need to give him some sort of security in the form of somebody who can just create after the catch and a guy who can get open underneath, who can get open over the top and can just get open and can take some manufactured touches and make the game a little bit easier on Fields because I do like the pairing of Justin Fields in an environment with an Aaron Glenn coach team and with Tanner Engstrand, who has been in Detroit for all of these years with Ben Johnson as his offensive coordinator. I do like that fit. Right now, though, outside of Garrett Wilson, that wide receiver room is pretty bad. And so just get the best available pass catcher right here. And that's Tyler Warren. And as much as we didn't love his blocking at the beginning of the season, I thought it got steadily better throughout the year as well as a run blocker. And so I don't think he's a liability in that phase of the game anymore, even though he's not a great run blocker. But again, Tyler Warren's a guy that you can have a security blanket. You can have a safety valve and a damn good one. And a guy that you can just get the football in his hands in a variety of ways. So we saw what Brock Bowers did in a bad offense with Gardner Minshew as quarterback. Like, I mean, Justin Fields plays the turbo jet on, and probably his brain works that fast as well, way too fast because he is just all over the place. But I think what you can see what Brock Bowers did last year, and you can try to replicate that a little bit here as well, given the talent that's kind of around Fields right now at the in terms of his pass catchers.
And just think of 260-pound Tyler Warren and Justin Fields in the same backfield.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
That's disgusting athleticism. At number 8, the Carolina Panthers. This might be the easiest pick in this mock draft. It's Shamar Stewart. Mm-hmm. That's it. Like, there's really not much to say. He's a great fit for Carolina at a position of need. He is a freak athlete. And that's really about all there is to say. I mean, we can just kind of move on. This is the pick that it should be.
Yeah. Yeah. Fits like
the way that this board falls. Because I do think Warren, I do think Tyler Warren could be another potential fit here.
I do too. There's a lot of people who still view Shamar Stewart as a mid to back end teen guy to early 20 guy. And it's just like, it's not going to happen. No. I mean, he's been top 10 on my board for a very long time. So I love Shamar Stewart. Love that fit. The New Orleans Saints are acting in good faith with Chris Olave that he's going to come back. You know, I've heard specifically that a couple teams have called about Chris Olave, and the Saints are holding down the fort that they're not going to trade him. So I think they have some, and they're running it back with Derek Carr. So I think they're trying to do this thing again. I don't completely understand it. That's to say, I don't think their wide receiver room obviously could use an upgrade because Rashid Shaheed and Kevin Austin are the next two receivers there with some.
I will say Shaheed is.
He's got some burners.
Unbelievable weapon, but you need somebody who you can get touches to. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at their cornerback room, dude, and they're slated to start Kool-Aid McKinstry and Isaac Yiadom. With Alante Taylor, and I like Alante Taylor in the nickel. Cowboys legend Rajon Wright is a reserve player here, as well as Rico Payton.
Nation Wright.
Okay, then Rajon's his brother, then. That was on Last Chance U. Yeah, so Rajon is the brother, then. But that's, we're talking about depth players starting, slotted as starters for the Saints.
I'm going to be real with you. I had no idea his brother was in the NFL.
Yeah, he was on Last Chance U, transferred to Oregon State like his brother did. from JUCO. Yeah, he's featured on Last Chance U, one of those the final seasons of the football Last Chance U. This is Will Johnson. I think this is a Will Johnson slot. They just traded Marshon Lattimore as well. This is not a very good cornerback room, and that's a very premium position. Again, they could go defensive tackle, but I mean, Kenneth Grant, Derek Harmon, this early feels a little bit iffy. They could go edge with Carl Granderson and then Cameron Jordan, who is getting up there, but they did just re-sign Chase Young as well. Isaiah Foskey hasn't hit, which I was not high on him coming out either anyway. This is maybe a sneaky Jahad Campbell pick with the Demario Davis's age getting up there a little bit, but I like Pete Warner as a Will in that defense as well, but I was a big Pete Warner fan coming out of college though. They have Tyrann Mathieu. They signed Justin Reed. Get a corner and then get Will Johnson.
I agree with this 100%. And at the end of the day, I just don't want to see Will Johnson slip out of the top 10 because I don't think he deserves shouldn't. It.
No.
Yeah. Number 10, dude, the Chicago Bears, all of a sudden, incredibly hard to draft for.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're a team that's incredibly hard to draft for and I don't love your edge group and there's an edge that, you know, might not have to start and seriously contribute right away because he's going to be able to be put into positions where you can maximize his strengths while trying to develop his weaknesses as a pass rusher, I think this is where Mykael Williams kind of slates if Ashton Jeanty is not on the board. Mm-hmm. And so for me, this is where we're at. I know people are going to maybe be a little bit iffy after running a 4.8, but that is not his game anyways, in my opinion. His game is length. His game is being able to stand up. I mean, even against double teams, he was playing 4-eye and in 3-tech at times for Georgia. Mm-hmm. And standing up against double teams in the SEC against some really good offensive lines. And so this is a young man with considerable run defending potential and the ability to win through the chest consistently. Now, winning up the arc is always probably going to be an issue. We've seen it work at the NFL level. I don't think he will be a difference-making pass rusher, but I don't think in that group he needs to necessarily be a difference-making pass rusher per se. And so for me, Mykael Williams at 10.
Yeah. To me, this is an interesting, maybe this is not a DAFT or draft, but another dialogue for another episode, but what did the Bears do if both Jeanty and Shamar Stewart are on the board? That would be an interesting conversation to have because I feel like Chicago's the floor for both of them. But what if they're both on the board?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a fantastic question. I think that they would.
There's a part of me that I think so too. There's a part of me that just is, their mindset might be effortless to score points.
Yeah.
So, all right, that's off topic. 11, San Francisco 49ers. We're gonna have our first wide receiver come off the board, and that's gotta be my wide receiver one. I'm taking Luther Burden over Tetero McMillan here, mainly because I don't love the fit of Tetero McMillan in that San Francisco offense. Like, they kind of have Juwan Jennings, who is their like power broker, run blocking big slot, who just like bullies nickels and safeties in the run game. But they've never really gotten great use out of an X wide receiver under Kyle Shanahan. I don't think they really have a lot of use for a pure X wide receiver under Kyle Shanahan either. And so that's why I'm going to draft a Luther Burden, who can win in a variety of ways. I think he can win in more of a variety of ways than he showed in college, where they just kind of stuck him in the slot and manufactured him touches and told him to run in a straight line for the most part, or run a slot fade. So I do think he can win a Z. I think he can win in the slot. You can manufacture this guy touches. They just traded Deebo Samuel, which is kind of the Deebo role there in San Fran for a while. There might be a little overlap with Ricky Pearsall, but again, I think Luther Burden can play in the Z more than he did at the college level. They're trying to trade Brandon Ayuk as well. So like, They're going to need another young wide receiver on a rookie contract. And to me, the best fit for that offense and for that head coach is the multitude, the variety of ways to use Luther Burden. So I'm going to go Luther Burden in the 49ers.
Yeah, and when you're looking at this, you have Juwan Jennings, you have Ricky Pearsall, and you have Brandon Ayuk, and people might be thinking, what the hell is this pick? But I do think that this is a very specific fit for the Kyle Shanahan offense that takes that offense to another level. And I do think that he's not Deebo Samuel. He's not a running back playing wide receiver, but you can use him situationally like they used Deebo Samuel a little bit. At number 12, the Dallas Cowboys. Jalen Tolbert. Jonathan Mingo, who they spent a fourth round pick on one of the worst route runners I've seen coming out of the NFL draft in a long time, and then continued to be the worst route runner in the NFL, and said, go play for Dak Prescott. Ridiculous decision on their part, but that's neither here nor there. They could have went offensive line here. They could go in a number of positions defensively, but we are trying to help out Dak Prescott and this offense. And to do so, we are going to get him a true X, a ball winner, and somebody who has that length to go and get the football in tight windows over the middle of the field. Now, how will he hold up physically over the middle of the field? Because Dak Prescott will throw a hospital ball. He will throw many hospital balls because he loves working tight windows over the middle of the field. But I do think that Tet McMillan is a potentially great fit alongside CeeDee Lamb and what CeeDee does in the slot. And so for me, this was a pretty easy decision.
Yeah, Tet ran a 4.55 to 4.58 today is what people estimated in his 40-yard dash. Outside of the Jordan Schultz tweet, he ran a 4.48, which definitely came from his agent.
He was never going to run a 4.47.
No.
And I had the Discord talking about that today as well. He ran a 4.47.
It's who he is on tape.
But everybody in the Discord was like, he ran a 4.47. It's probably a 4.55. Like that is, and it's just at the end of the day, it is what it is. It is what the tape is. And that's all that matters. We talked about this with Matthew Golden. As good as we think Matthew Golden is, he didn't play the 4.29.
Nope.
He didn't play that fast.
He doesn't. Nope. Yep. So totally agree here. Tet McMillan to the Cowboys. Miami Dolphins. This isn't such an easy pick for me in that offense, in their needs. Armand Membaugh to the Dolphins here with the 13th overall pick. He could play right tackle for him. He could play left tackle for him if Teron Armstead retires. It doesn't freaking matter. I know they have Austin Jackson. They just gave a contract out to last season, but
No, they really like Austin Jackson.
Yeah,
that's the problem. So it's going to have to probably be left tackle here.
Yeah. But this is an easy pick for me to send Membaugh to the Dolphins here. Easy mobility and Mike McDaniel's wide zone offense. He has the torque, the punch, the ability to climb to thrive in duo gap situations as well. So this is just it's an easy fit for me to send Membaugh to the Dolphins.
Yeah, I'm going to get ahead of this a little bit. I know people are going to give you crap about this pick if they listen to it and they are Dolphins fans, because you have Teron Armstead, Patrick Paul, and Austin Jackson there.
Teron Armstead might retire.
Teron Armstead might retire, but they're going to sit there and they're going to tell you that Patrick Paul is right there, and they drafted him in the second round last year. I never liked Patrick Paul as a prospect, and I love Armand Membaugh, so that's where I stand with it. And at the end of the day, your quarterback is glass.
Yep.
And so you can't bet on Patrick Paul being good enough. You have to throw as many assets at this offensive line as humanly freaking possible. I like that they went out and got James Daniels. Liam Eikenberg is not very good.
No.
Aaron Brewer, like they came and they went and they got Larry Borum as a depth piece at offensive tackle. But like, I don't care. 5, 6, 7 offensive tackles. I don't care. Your quarterback might have to retire after another head injury. So you protect him with your life, with every asset that you can bring. That is my opinion on the Miami Dolphins. The next selection is the Indianapolis Colts. A freak athlete, position of somewhat need. I think that they, more than anything, need to improve their secondary, and I don't like any of the corners at this point for the Indianapolis Colts. I know that they just went out and got Cameron Bynum. I know that they have Nick Cross. I don't care whatsoever. Nicky Mamori, to me, is a dude who, at safety, you draft top 10 and you don't even think about it. And I know not everybody views him that way. And I've been very steadfast in understand, learn ball. Mm-hmm. And that's just me being cocky about this and him and being confident. And if you guys have known me long enough, you guys know that's not the type of person or evaluator I am. I'm very much someone who realizes that we're going to be wrong most of the time in this industry, mm-hmm. and not to get too gung-ho about singular players. But Nicky Mamori is one guy I'm that gung-ho about, and he is everything that Chris Ballard loves in a player, which is just height, weight, speed, freak. Mm-hmm. Plus, he has the cognitive ability of a top-end safety. You go for that every time.
Love it. I love it. He's a Ballard guy all day long. Ballard guy all day long. All right, I'm going to read off to you the Atlanta Falcons linebackers right here as I get ready to make my fifth, the pick of 15 here. Troy Anderson, whose shoulder is made of glass. Caden Ellis. They just signed Devon Diablo and J.D. Bergstrand. And Josh Woods. I don't know who Josh Woods is. I've watched a lot of football, and I know a lot of players. I don't know who Josh Woods is. This team needs a linebacker in the worst way. All the reports out of Atlanta are that they're just gearing up to have a very heavily defense draft here. Jahad Campbell. I'm taking Jahad Campbell and adding him to this room as well. Again, I don't love the edges that we have left on the board. Between the Mike Green and the James Pierce thing, I'm not touching either of those guys right here. They just re-signed Mike Hughes, so that tells you they like him opposite AJ Terrell at least enough to bring him back. Jesse Bates is still in their secondary. I'm going linebacker here. I'm going Jahad Campbell. Again, one of the better coverage linebackers I've seen in recent years. Can line up at Sam, can line up at Mike, can spot drop, can trigger downhill. Freak athlete. Combine data showed him as the fastest player at the combine of any position. So, like, this is an extraordinary talent. And so I'm going to take him here to the Falcons.
We are going to go big here in Arizona. We are going to pair Buda Baker with Malachi Starks. I'm going safety here to end this first round. There's no better way for me personally as a safety guy to end the round. Malachi Starks is somebody who I think fits incredibly well opposite of somebody like Buda Baker. Buda Baker, a playmaker, is really, really great around the line of scrimmage, moving him around, allowing him to do a lot of different things. And so is Malachi Starks, but I think Malachi Starks does his best work more on the back end as a safety kind of corner hybrid player. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I think it's a really good schematic fit. I think it's a really good fit opposite of the player that they just, you know, recently gave a 3-year extension to when we thought he might be at the end of his road in Arizona. If that's a team that can improve, I would love to see Buda Baker win some football games for the first time in his career, really. And I know that they've had like little spurts of runs here and there, but that team a couple of years ago where they had the defensive performance in the top 5 with absolutely nobody on that defensive roster, we knew that that was never going to be a true contending team. Let's see if they could turn it around for Buda Baker, you know, kind of in the twilight of his career, get him a really good running mate. And I think the more that I do this, the more the football I watch, the more I get gung-ho about building the spine of a defense and letting the rest of it fall into place. If you can get interior pressure, if you have good linebackers and good safety play in a modern defense, in a quarters-based defense, you can survive elsewhere. You can survive with corners who are scheme fits. You can survive with edge players who are more so role players if you can get a guy on the interior to give you interior pressure. If your linebackers can freaking cover and patrol the middle of the field, Fred Warner gives Dak Prescott nightmares. Even if he's not on the schedule, Dak has recurring nightmares about Fred Warner over the middle. If you can get a guy like that, and you talked about that with Jahad Campbell, if Jahad Campbell brings 80% of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, build the spine of a defense, and doing that with Malachi Starks and Buda Baker in a Jonathan Gannon defense is a great move in my opinion.
I love it. All right. Well, that rounds out the first part of this mock draft. We'll be back with picks 17 through 32 tomorrow. Yeah.
The things start to get weird.
Yeah, things do get weird.
In the back half of round one now. It's a lot of fun.
We get off the rails a little bit on that back part there. I'm looking forward to that as well. Again, we're trying to be as predictive as possible. Obviously, mock drafts are never super predictive. So, because shit happens in layman's terms, I guess that's the only way to say it. But hope you enjoyed. We'll be back again for the back half of this mock draft tomorrow. Until then, this has been another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast.